Maharaj Mandhata. Generally, the great sages, they didn't go to visit kings. Kings would come to visit them. Who is superior, he will not go to the inferior. So usually the kings would visit the rishis and us in the forest. From time to time they would go and ask their blessings. And sometimes, because the rishis, they were living in the forest and the kings were living in the city. But sometimes the kings would call the rishis for some, there was some special function, some yajna, they would call for their blessings, or if a new child was born in the royal family, they would ask the rishis to come and give blessings. There was cooperation between the rishis in the forest and the kings in the city. There was close cooperation between the brahmanas and the kshatriyas. Now sometimes the brahmanas would come to the city to see the king to ask for some benefit, ask for some help or something from them. And the attitude of the king would be not that the rishis need my help, but he's come to engage me in some service for my benefit. Just like we see Vishvamitra Rishi came to visit Maharaj Dasharatha to ask him to get rid of these demons who were disturbing his sacrifices. So Vishvamitra as a rishi could himself destroy the demons, the rakshasas who were attacking his sacrifice. By his mystic power, he could very easily destroy them. But the rishis, they didn't like to use up their mystic power. They accumulated mystic power by performing austerities and following the rules and regulations of the yoga system. So they wanted to keep their mystic power for their own elevation. Therefore they would ask the kings, you come and get rid of these rakshasas. That also gave the king something to do, to fulfill their duty of protecting the citizens. So when Sobhari Muni came to, also they might ask something from the king, they might ask some cows, something, they might ask some, if they required something material, they might ask that, because the kings, they would maintain all the citizens, especially the brahmanas. That was their duty to see. The brahmanas were looked after. Nice. Brahmanas didn't have to worry about their income, simply prosecute spiritual activities for the benefit of all human society. And even though they were in the forest and the human society was going on in the city, still the effect of their pious activities, that would have an influence on the whole planet, that would be auspicious for the whole planet. So when King Mandhata saw Sobhari Muni come, he must have considered himself very fortunate. The rishi has come to me to give me some opportunity to serve him. But he didn't expect that Sobhari Muni would ask the king to serve. How can I serve you? What can I do for you? How about one of your daughters? He didn't think. The rishi was, he would give benedictions for your material happiness. May you have material happiness. He would give benedictions. But it wasn't expected that the Muni himself would come to ask for something for material happiness. It was expected.
Hare Krishna.
It was expected that he had already gone beyond that. What was he doing in the forest, performing austerities? The idea was to have spiritual elevation. It wasn't expected that he would come to ask for sense gratification. He was expected to be beyond all that. As a rishi, he had gone to the forest with the understanding that material life, material happiness, Sri Aishvarya Pajib Sabha, this means women, opulence, expanding the family dynasty. So what's the use? What is the use of this? Let us instead engage in austerities. Tapo divyam putraka yena sabram shrijat brahma sukham tvanantam. Rishabdeva advises nayam deho deha bhritam riloke kashtam kaman arhate vidbhujam ye. Tapo divyam putraka yena sabram shrijat brahma sukham tvanantam. He says that now you have achieved the human form of life, why should you act for sense gratification, which even the hogs and dogs who eat stool get? Rather, you should engage in austerities for the purpose of spiritual elevation, so that you can achieve eternal happiness. Material happiness, that is temporary happiness. And it is, you see, the Brahma Sokyam Tunantam, spiritual happiness is called Anantam. That means unending, unlimited. So there are two ways in which material happiness is limited. It is, by its very nature, it's not happiness anyway. And anyway, even if you consider it happiness, it's temporary. Anityam asukham lokam, Krishna says in Gita, this material world is not a place of happiness. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. And anyway, the so-called happiness is temporary. The happiness which is there is very meager. It's also described by Prahlad Maharaj. Yan maituna adi grihameedi sukham tucham. Material happiness means the happiness of family life, beginning with sex enjoyment, that is tucha, means very insignificant. Just some happiness is there, but very insignificant. But spiritual happiness, that is not insignificant. That is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anandam buddhi. It is like a great ocean of happiness. And that is anandam buddhi vardhanam, it's also increasing, it's not decreasing. In material life, whatever happiness is there, it's always, it decreases. If you think you're happy by going to a disco, then you like dancing in the disco, then why don't you dance for 7 days and nights non-stop? You won't like to do it. It will be a torture. If you like to eat gulab jamuns, so the first one will be very nice, second one will be nice, third one will be also nice. But then when you get to 30, of course some of our devotees, they even go beyond 30 at a time. But if you're told, here's one big bucket, huge, with 2,000 gulab jamuns, you have to eat them all. And even if you are the world champion gulab jamun eater, then after some time it will seem like a torture to you. But in the spiritual world, you can eat the whole. You can go on. There's no, it's unlimited. There's an unlimited supply. So the Kalpa Vriksha tree is there. But the happiness in the spiritual world is unlimited, because that happiness comes from serving Krishna and is not limited by time. Therefore, an intelligent person takes up austerities. That means, austerities means to deny oneself material enjoyment, so that he can cultivate the spirit of transcendental enjoyment. So Sobari Muni, he was cultivating that, but then, as I was describing the other day, his spirit of material enjoyment again came up because of some offense, Vaishnava Varada. So his spirit of enjoyment again came up, and he went to visit the king. I want to enjoy. You see, the fish are also, he's seeing the fish, they're enjoying. But why shouldn't I enjoy? I'm more than a fish. What am I doing sitting here in the water, not enjoying? See, even the fish are enjoying. Why shouldn't I enjoy? That his consciousness became polluted like that. So he had to find some nice young woman. So where are the most beautiful women in the king's daughters? Generally the Kshatriyas, both men and women, their features are very beautiful, very good looking. That comes good karma to be born in a king's family. And that king's family, that means, that is the, in the human form of life, that is the best for sense enjoyment. So if you have that karma to be born in a king's family, then generally the bodily features will be very beautiful also. So he thought, let me enjoy, let me go and see the king, get one of his daughters. Now often when we're preaching Krishna consciousness, young people, they're interested. Young people may be interested, old people may be interested. Often we see that young people are interested. Actually one time Prabhupada was asked, At that time, it was mostly all young people in our movement. When I joined, I was age 18, and I think the oldest devotee in the temple was about 24 years old, like that. And any devotee, maybe some devotee would come who was 30 years old, and they were considered a venerable old man, because there were all young people were joining. So one newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada that, why is so many young people in your movement? Why is it mostly young people? Prabhupada replied by asking another question. He said, why is it young people mostly in the university? So the reporter said that, well, that's the age for learning. Prabhupada said, yes, it's the same reason they're here. This is, you should learn about Krishna consciousness. This is, so anyone can learn at any time, but generally, comparatively speaking, the young mind is more open, so young people may be more interested. So when young people come, the older people who are in charge of them usually say, don't do this now. When you're old and you can't walk and you can't dance in discos anymore, and you can't enjoy life, then you take up spiritual learning. Now you're young, you should enjoy. And when you can't enjoy anymore, then you become a sadhu. This is their idea. But we see here that Sovari Muni, he became a sadhu. Then when he got to old age, he thought, let me enjoy. He was around the other way. Actually, usually if people, they don't take up spiritual life in their youth, then in their old age, it's difficult to change the habit. If you're accustomed to sense enjoyment, it's very difficult to change the habit in old age. We see in the Western countries, old people, they mostly look very frustrated and miserable. Now, one reason for that may be that because no one looks after them, they're simply put off to put in some old person's home. That means the young, their children don't want to look after them in their old age, because they're a nuisance. Old people, as they get older, you have to feed them, clothe them, and they're not exciting. They can't go to discos with you, so they're just a nuisance. It interferes with your sense gratification. So they don't like to look after old people. So one reason the old people are neglected. Another thing is, they want to enjoy life. The body may be old and worn out. They want to enjoy. They have no capacity to enjoy. They're still buying the newspaper with the pictures of the naked women, and they're looking and they're desiring, but they have no capacity to enjoy. Nor are young women interested in them. So they're frustrated. Desire is there, but ability to fulfill it is not. Often we hear about we generally think wise old people. When you become old, you become wise. But if during your life you live like an animal, then when you get old, you'll simply be like an old animal, that's all. You have to cultivate wisdom throughout your life, and then when you're older, then that will become mature. But if you don't cultivate it, it's not that just one day you wake up and all of a sudden you're wise. What does wise mean? That means you're experienced in understanding the values of life and can give advice to others, that you've throughout your life you've cultivated higher values. But if throughout your life you don't cultivate any higher values, then you'll simply be old and foolish. Just another time in London, someone came to Prabhupada and they were saying, I see there are all young people here, all your followers, but generally you would think that young people are not wise, you would think that old people are wise. So Prabhupada said the same thing. He said, if you cultivate proper knowledge in your youth, you can be a wise young man. And if you're foolish in your old age, then you're a foolish old man. It doesn't necessarily depend upon age. Of course, if someone does cultivate spiritual knowledge from a young age, then it's expected as he grows older and goes on cultivating that knowledge and learns how to apply that knowledge in his life, then he will become a wise old man or wise old woman, grandmother. Very important in human society, the grandmother. What's missing in families today? Grandmothers, wise old grandmothers. Anyway, that's another big subject. Grandmother Tattva. That's not today's subject. But here we see Sovari Muni. He was a wise man, but he lost his wisdom. And he became actually very foolish. That I'm just saying, because actually he's a great personality. We're not to disrespect him. But at this particular time, he is acting in a way that even a few days before, he himself would be thinking, this is completely foolish. He was sitting in the water, and sitting in the water meditating. Why is he there? Because he's taken up a spirit of Vairagya. So Vairagya means you've seen and you've heard about material life. And the transcendentalists, they consider attached material life to be simply foolishness. It is foolishness. That's why they accept severe austerities, to become detached from that. So when they even think about that, they're generally their way of thinking. They say, what is this waste of time, material life? He'd already gone beyond that. But his consciousness, his maya, affected him in such a way that he again became attracted. He saw the fish copulating. Now, everything we see, everyone in this world, we see, touch, taste, smell, feel, we have different sensations. All the time, we are receiving information from the world. We're seeing things, we're hearing things, all different things. And even if you go to meditate in the river, so as to be away from human civilization, you will also see something like this. One fish eats another fish. One fish copulates with another fish. So different sensual stimuli will be there. But a transcendentalist trains his consciousness, trains his intelligence to see everything through the eye of Shastra. So a devotee who's trained through the eye of Shastra, when he sees people or fish engaging in sensual activities, he doesn't think, let me enjoy like that. He thinks, how foolish they are, wasting their lives. This is the activity of maya. If a devotee sees, you will see dogs or some lower species engaged in sensual enjoyment like that. And the devotee doesn't think, oh God, I should be enjoying also. He thinks, just see how strong is maya. That because he's trained in practical renunciation. But if he loses that intelligence, Sovari Muni lost his keen spiritual intelligence due to being influenced by material desires, having offended Garuda. So instead of seeing this and thinking, I'm so fortunate to be detached from this, I'm so fortunate that if I was not doing it, if I was in the human form of life, if I was using this human form of life to enjoy as these fish are enjoying, then in future I will also become a fish to enjoy like this, because that is the nature of the material world. As long as you go on trying to enjoy this material world, then you are guaranteed to go on transmigrating in the cycle of birth and death. And sometimes you'll be a fish enjoying. So Sovari Muni, instead of thinking, I'm so fortunate to be detached from this, he became foolish and thought, let me enjoy this. And he should have thought, you see, the power of maya is so great. And how is it that he's going to go to the king with, you see, his head is always shaking, Yes, because due to old age. In old age there are different infirmities. So one of them is like this. So his head is always shaking. Ejatka, that's called it. And his skin is all wrinkled. His hair is all, anyway, like a yogi, it's all matted like this. And it's grey. And he's going to the king and asking, please give me your daughter. Well, who would want to give their daughter to some shriveled up old prune? You know what the prune is? The dried fruit? It's all wrinkled up. So the king was very intelligent. He couldn't say no. He couldn't say no to the muni. But he said, well, my daughters, the king's daughters, they sometimes have that opportunity. I'm going to allow them to choose their own husband. So then immediately he thought, oh, which girl's going to choose me? Jai Ram Hashams. Yeah, wait a minute. No girl's going to want to marry me like this. And see, I'm all old and worn out and I'm a yogi. Which girl would want to marry a yogi? Because a yogi means they're not practiced in sense enjoyment. They're practiced in withdrawal of the senses from their objects. So I want to enjoy. Now sometimes a girl with a renounced disposition, she'll also marry a man of renounced disposition. But I want to get married because I want to enjoy. So I need, which girl will want to marry a yogi? I had an experience once, something like this. I was flying from Bangkok in Thailand to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. So I was wearing kami clothes because we have, it's a Muslim country, we have to enter that country in kami clothes. So then we were flying along and I asked the air hostess, how much time is there left for the flight? She said, whatever. Then she started asking me so many questions. Said, where are you from? Where are you going? What are you doing? I thought, wait a minute, she's becoming too friendly. So I said, actually, I took off my cap, showing my hair. Look, I'm a member of the Hare Krishna movement. And boom, she went down the aisle as quickest moving air hostess you ever saw. She lost interest immediately. So generally people are not, women are interested in material enjoyment. They're not interested in yogi. They want some bhogi, material enjoyer. So Sovari Muni thought, I have to convert myself into something attractive. So he did, by his yogic power, he made himself very beautiful. Then none of the girls would, if he had gone before with all his grey hair and wrinkles and asked them to marry him, they would have joked and laughed, and he could have cursed them. That sometimes happens. But he converted himself into looking like a very beautiful young man. Then they all wanted to marry him. All 50 of them, they all married him. So he got that power by performing yogic austerity. It's very, it's very powerful what you can do. That's by the yogic austerity, you get so much power, but that there's another power called Maya, which is stronger than the power of the yogis, which offers them material enjoyment in return for their mystic potency. So if they succumb to that, that means that they have been overcome by Maya, by the power of Maya. They were resisting the power of Maya, but actually in their heart, they wanted what Maya has got to offer, which is personal enjoyment. So Maya can catch them, and then they can enjoy like anything. But if you enjoy like that, then you lose all your mystic potency. And after some time, the bubble bursts and your enjoyment is finished. It's the same with anyone. Anyone who's enjoying material opulence because of some good karma, some pious activities performed previously, after some time it comes to an end and you stop enjoying. That's why those who are pious and intelligent enjoyers, they simultaneously perform pious activities and enjoy. That's called karma kanda. But let us, we'll enjoy and we'll perform pious activities. And we'll also perform some austerities, chaturmasya or something like this. Generally people perform chaturmasya, generally they don't perform chaturmasya. But generally those who used to perform, they would perform with the idea that in future we shall enjoy more. So it's a very, this is the karma mimamsa philosophy. Let us enjoy. But when you enjoy, you decrease the results of your pious activities. So we'll go on performing pious activities. And if we do anything wrong, we'll perform some prayaschitta. What's that called? Expurgatory activity. What's the word Prabhupada uses to translate that? Huh? Atonement. Some activities for atonement, to atone for our sins. So that's, in that way, even a great yogi can be overpowered by Maya. He thinks he's overcoming Maya, but because in his heart the seed of enjoyment is there, then he can be trapped. You see here, Sovari Muni got trapped on the very gross platform, but sometimes yogis, they become entrapped on a not such a gross platform. They become attracted to enjoy the mystic siddhis that they attain by yoga practice, that gradually they attain power, that they can become very light. And when you become light, you can move around the universe here and you can go here and there as you like. You can become very tiny, so you can go anywhere. Yeah, so you can just be, you can vanish and become invisible, no one can see you. You can enter into any place. You can control people's minds just by looking at them or just by desiring to do so. You can manipulate matter. Just like here we see Sovari Muni, he restored his body to youthful beauty, maybe even more beautiful than his body was in his youth. So these, you get, if you have these siddhis, then it becomes very attractive and you like to show it off, you like to come out into human society and show it to others. And people will worship you as an incarnation of God. So that way they also enjoy. Then they become sinful. Then they lose their power. By their mystic siddhi, they can even convince people that they are God. There's something called charisma. That's almost like a mystic siddhi, by which people they can convince people, or they can convince people that they're so wonderful, they should be followed. Even though many times people with charisma, they have the worst character. But somehow or other, people are attracted to follow them. So it's some kind of siddhi that people have from previous life, some reaction. So Sovari Muni, he's using up his mystic credits by enjoying the material world. But a devotee, he's in a better position than the mystic yogi. Because his attempt at spiritual realization goes to the root of the problem. Material life, how is that called? Is it material life? That is, dukhalayama shashvatam. Everything in this material world is temporary and miserable. So the yogis, they try to overcome that condition. But you see, as long as the desire for material enjoyment is in the heart, even if it's in very subtle form, it can fall down at any time. And actually the desire for material enjoyment, that remains within the yogi's heart. They're thinking that we are overcoming material desires, but they're not actually overcoming them. They're simply redirecting them. They make the mistake of thinking that if we stop eating nice food, having social intercourse, enjoying family life, then we've stopped material enjoyment. But they haven't. Because they're still trying to enjoy in another way, by thinking of themselves as good as God, or identifying themselves as separate from Krishna. It means, sometimes the yogis, they think they are Krishna. That's a misunderstanding. But they misidentify themselves by not accepting their position as servant of Krishna. So it means that they're just trying to enjoy in another way, by maintaining their sense of identity separate from that of subordination to Krishna. That's why a devotee, he goes to the root of the problem of material life by taking up the attitude of service to Krishna. So only a devotee can cross over material life. Only a devotee. The yogis, however powerful they become, however detached they become, they cannot enter into the spiritual world. Or even if they go to the spiritual world, they cannot enter into the pastimes of the Lord. They can only enter the Brahma Jyoti. But there they have to fall down again because their desires for material enjoyment remain. Even though the yogis, they purify their consciousness in the sense that they become detached from gross material enjoyment, that they don't become fully purified because they neglect to worship the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, even they go up to the Brahma Jyoti, again they have to fall down. Their material desires remain. So Krishna consciousness is the only way to fully extinguish all material desires which are there even in the heart in root form or seed form, even before the root. Bijam, Kutam is described in Padma Purana. There are different phases of sinful reaction. Prarabdha karma means the sinful reaction. We are suffering now. Bij, Kuta. Kuta means it's about to be manifested. And Bij, it means there is the desire for material enjoyment very deep within the heart. It hasn't even started to become manifest yet. So that is there with everybody, because the seed of material enjoyment, the very basic principle of material enjoyment, is our envy of Krishna, our non-acceptance of service to Krishna. Therefore, only by surrendering to Krishna, only by developing pure Krishna consciousness, can we destroy all desires for material enjoyment in the heart very deeply. Otherwise, you see, there may be weeds in the field, and you may plow the field or cut the weeds and all the weeds go away, but underneath the ground the roots are there. So in the same way, and again the weed comes up, or the seeds are there. By plowing you simply distribute the seeds and again more weeds come up. So in the same way, someone may perform severe austerities and on the surface it appears that the material desires have gone away, but they come up more strongly. So much so that someone who performs severe austerities, he may claim himself to be God. Now we see in India so many people claiming themselves to be God. It means that anyway in the material world, everyone is mad. They're insane because they're trying to enjoy in a place where they cannot enjoy. But someone who claims himself as God, it means his madness has reached its limit. What could be more insane than this? You see, if anyone except Atal Bihari Vajpayee says, "I am the Prime Minister of India," you may find some crazy people who say, "I am the Prime Minister of India." So he's a crazy man. He likes to think, "I am the Prime Minister of India," because he likes to think, "I am very important." So, pick up the phone. "Hello, who is there?" "I am the Prime Minister." He's not the Prime Minister, he's just some crazy man. So he's a crazy man. You put him in the crazy home, or in India, just let them wander on the street. More common. So a crazy person, because he's thinking that he's someone who he's not. Everyone is thinking like that. I'm thinking, "I am this body. I'm Indian, I'm Gujarati." But you're not. It's not you. You are the soul, eternal self of Krishna. So if you say, "I am Indian, I'm Gujarati, I'm BSc, PhD, all of that," that is one kind of madness. But if you say, I am God, that means your madness has come to the limit of madness. There's nothing more crazy than this. So it means that, what is this madness? It means an increase in material desires. By material desires you become crazy. And when the material desires increase more and more, you become more and more crazy. And the limit of that is when you say, I am God. And what could be more insane than that? We actually see that people who become more and more materialistic, they actually become more and more crazy. That there are so many, actually there are so, as the spirit of material enjoyment has been increased in modern society, so there are more and more cases of insanity, mental disturbance. Because people are trying to enjoy, they're doing their best, but they're not happy and they become frustrated. Why am I not happy? I saw on TV that everyone who does, I'm following what they do, they dress up with fashions and they go to discos, and they have a girlfriend and then they have another girlfriend, and doing all those things, and I wear a Rolex watch and I drink the best whiskey and I do all the things you're supposed to do to be happy, but I'm miserable. What's wrong? And they can't understand it. They become more and more frustrated and they go crazy. So the yogi is there, they're trying to get free from material desires because they understand that this is useless, crazy waste of time. But then if they end up thinking that, let me become God, I'll identify myself as God, then they actually become more crazy. They are there. They think they're making advancement, but actually they're just suffering from the same disease in a different way, that's all. They're not uprooting the symptoms. In Ayurveda, they've seen that the proper way to treat the disease is to treat the cause of the disease. If you only treat the symptoms, as in allopathic medicine, then the disease will manifest in a different way. It will just simply come back in another way. So in the same way, if you try to become detached from material life without developing your love of Krishna, the forgetfulness of which is the cause of our material life, then instead of grossly enjoying, you'll want to think that I have become God. It's the same disease in another way. So therefore, the only way to get actually free from material desires, to burn up the seeds, the very seed of material enjoyment, is to surrender to Krishna. That is discussed by Shukadev Goswami. When Parikshit Maharaj asked him, how can people get free from suffering? Is it by karma? No. Is it by jnana? No. How is it? Kechit kevaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana aghandun vanti kachdena viharanita bhaskara. Shukadeva Goswami says that only by pure devotional service to Krishna can you become free from all material desires to the very root, cleaned up. So that is the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement. That's also spoken by Lord Krishna. Aham sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarvapapevyo mokshayasyami nashacha. Krishna says, you surrender to me, I will deliver you from all sins. All sins means not only the present sinful reactions which are manifest, but even from within the very heart. That Prahlad Maharaj was also praying. Nrisimhadev asked, what benediction do you want? He said, the only benediction I want is that I will be free from all material desires, even from the core of my heart. So it's not very easy to get free from material desires from the core of the heart, because we are very much addicted to such material desires. But if we surrender to Krishna factually, then we can become free from such desires. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Yeah, the question is that the aim is to become free from material desire, but how many people are actually on that platform and what are my chances of attaining that platform? How many people are on that platform? Well, we didn't make a census. how many people are on that platform? There may not be that many, but how many are moving towards that platform? There are many. You can also move towards that platform. What are my chances? Well, that's up to you to make the endeavor. Otherwise, definitely Krishna, he promises that those who take to my devotional service, if they stick to the path, they will be successful. So the promise is there from Krishna. So if you follow, you'll make progress. Like I say, there are many who are on the path, and we can see they're making progress. And what's the alternative? Simply become a pig. And so at least if you chant Hare Krishna, you can make some progress. If you don't, then you're simply lining yourself up to become a cat or a dog or a pig. So at least do something, make some progress. What is the definition of what?
What's the definition of success?
Definition of success is to become fully Krishna conscious, free from material desires. Progress means to progress. Progress is measured by that that's described in Bhagavatam. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo virakti ranyatra. Our progress in devotional life will be seen by how much we're becoming. We're experiencing Krishna, becoming attached to Krishna, and becoming detached from everything else that is not related to Krishna consciousness. So that we'll have to see. Definitely so many devotees are making progress. Balabhadra Bhattacharya Das Brahmacharya. What is your question? Let me try to summarize your question. I was saying in a previous class how the material energy, when one takes shelter of the spiritual energy, then the material energy doesn't act upon him in the same way that it acts upon a materialist, but rather the spiritual energy works through the material energy to uplift the devotee. Well, Sobari Muni hadn't directly taken shelter of the spiritual energy because he wasn't a devotee. That those who are devotees, Mahatmanas Tumam Partha Daiving Prakriti Mahashritaha, those who are devotees, they're under the shelter of the divine nature. Why? Because Daiving Prakriti Mahashritaha Vajantyananya Manaso Gyatva Bhutadi Nabiya. Those are Mahatmas, Krishna says, who know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship me thus. And they're engaged in Satatam Kirtayanto Ma, engaged in glorifying Krishna. So Sobari Muni was not a devotee. So he wasn't under that, you see, even he may be a great yogi, but you're not under the shelter of the divine energy. That's why they perform many severe austerities, but they still remain within the purview of the material energy. Whereas a devotee, he can't perform, so he doesn't have that same strength of mind to perform severe austerities. But by chanting Hare Krishna and his attitude of service to Krishna, he comes under the protection of the divine energy, and he goes far forward in spiritual life more than the yogis. Even though it appears that the yogis' achievement is greater, actually it's not. The devotee, it's just like however fast you run by your own potency, you can't go as fast as someone sitting in a car. Someone sitting in a car, he's only sitting. He's not working hard like someone running. The person who's running, even though he's working much harder, he's not going as fast. No, it's not that by mystic power you achieve liberation. Mystic power is a byproduct of the process of mystic yoga. It's not that by attaining those powers you attain liberation. There is no use. It's useless. It's an inducement from Maya. That's all. There's no value to obtaining mystic powers. Those who are less intelligent, they're attracted by such things. Devotees are not interested in mystic powers. And Krishna may give devotees some kind of mystic... when you say mystic power, it just means we don't understand how it works. Otherwise, any power is mystic. To a child who's not informed, he thinks his father is performing something very mystic and wonderful by turning on the car and driving it. He thinks it's amazing. Every young child thinks his father is some kind of Superman because he does all kinds of things which the child cannot imagine how they're done. So in the same way, we think that these powers of the yogis is something very wonderful. But it's another kind of material power, that's all. That's why it's only called mystic, because it's not within our ordinary experience. Otherwise, nothing very special. What's the value of it? You can make your body very light and you